Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Festival on October 18th through the 20th, featuring country legends like Luke Bryan, Thomas Rhett, and Keith Urban. Find the participating stores at partythelazyway.com. While you're at a Lazy Boy store, trade in your old furniture and score a discount on a brand new Lazy Boy.
This is the story of the one. As a facility technician installing a new welding station, he knows getting the ventilation right is critical for safety. That's why when questions arise, there's Grainger. Grainger offers detailed technical product information online at his fingertips, so it's easy to find what he needs. Because when it comes to safety, having answers means he and his people can breathe a little easier. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Join us at the Lesher Center for the Arts in Walnut Creek for our KCBS conversation, State of Mental Health, on September 23rd from 5:30 p.m. till 7 p.m. Hear from Nicole Stelter from Blue Shield of California, Juan Acosta, mental health advocate, and more. For info, visit 957thegame.com.
This is the story of the one. As a warehouse manager, her job is to transform chaos into clarity and to see patterns where others see problems. Luckily, she's got a partner who shares her perspective. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products, backed by real-person support and in-depth online resources, so she can tackle every task with precision and turn potential setbacks into streamlined success. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Mira, Jorge, let's bring the nail gun over here.
Jose stands tall atop his sustainable flooring company.
Totally. It's renewable and moisture resistant, but we have several green options too. Or we got some beautiful reclaimed oak.
By his success, he needs to hire more installers.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Put our matching platform to work so you can spend less time searching and more time connecting with talented candidates. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ-FM in HD1 San Francisco, on Odyssey Sports Station. Always live on the free Odyssey app, Twitch, and YouTube. Powered by First NorCal Credit Union.
The long snap, and right the punt, and cowing the rookie. They're caught. Oh, dropped it at the 10. It's loose. It's live. It's been covered inside. The Vikings, I think, have gotten it. Let's see. Maybe it was still squirming inside.
I think cowing ended up coming back.
I think he did.
Now back to overtime with Grandy, Madsen, and Bennett, with sounds from the locker room and your calls at 888-957-9570. Overtime continues now.
Yeah, it was actually Isaac Yadam that recovered that muffed punt by Jacob Cowling, the rookie. Not great. Didn't turn into a turnover right then, but very quickly after that, Brock Purdy would turn the ball over, and it would turn into a touchdown for the Vikings, and that's how the game kind of got away from the 49ers, and that that era, that period of the game, Sterling, I think kind of defines the kind of game that this was. The Niners just simply making too many big mistakes to win this game. Like, you can find positives to point to. Jordan Mason, a second consecutive 100-yard game. Fred Warner is not just playing like all pro Fred, but playing like defensive player of the year Fred
yes.
Warner. He has forced three fumbles in two games, and also two of them have been recovered by the Niners. He also has an interception. He has a sack in this game. You have reasons to be excited. You've seen some other things. I think Malik Collins maybe wasn't as good in this game, but you're all right with how the run defense has been through two games. Like, there's reasons to be excited and encouraged, but these major mistakes in this game, I don't really care what team you are, if you have the full team healthy, and if you have the most talent in the NFL, if you're a Pro Bowl roster, you make the kind of major mistakes the Niners made today, Sterling, it's going to be really, really hard for you to win a football game, and that's what played out for us today.
And also, you add on the expectations we have for them, where it's like, Super Bowl caliber, going to be an NFC champion once again, number one seed in the NFC, and they come out and lay an egg like that. It's like watching the prime Golden State Warriors with Kevin Durant and Curry and Draymond and Klay, and they come out and they lay a stinker against the Mavericks, and you're like, huh?
They were How'd this happen? They were so good, and the NBA schedule is such that you could just like take 10 different nights off throughout the course of a yes. season, and you'd be totally fine, but you can't do that in the NFL.
No, you can't, and it's like, okay, like, if you're the Niners, again, you have to win every game, or, you know, not every game, but you have to be in position and put yourselves in a place to at least be in every game. And yes, they were technically in this game, but if you look at from a component of the Vikings may have won this game, but San Francisco certainly played down to them. The Vikings played well. The defense played well for them. The offense did their job, but San Francisco made the critical mistakes to keep them and their lead preserved rather than overtaking them and actually separating in this one. We've known what this team can do for a handful of years. Losing to the Vikings, albeit, is become all too common in Minnesota since 1992. It should never be accepted. I think that's where I'm at, where it's, okay, winning in Minnesota is tough for us. They have maybe an underrated team, a quarterback playing the best he ever has through 2 weeks of the NFL season. It's young. It's early. The Rams are going to be 0-2. Seattle's 2-0. The Cardinals are 1-1. The world's entirely upside down right now. Which way is up, which way is down, who knows? But we expect so much more from this roster. And I can guarantee you they're going to walk back in that locker room and they're going to say, we expect more from ourselves. We have to be better if you want to beat even a Rams team who may not have Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp. Like, you can't just waltz into Levi South and be like, well, this one's locked up. Easy peasy. Got the dub. That's what leads to games like this. And not to question San Francisco's effort, but you can definitely tell there was a black cloud over their head in this one from the jump. Go back to, I believe it was the Vikings' first drive of the game. 3rd and 3. Here we go. Sam Darnold thinks he's going to make a statement. We're going to stuff him right here, and we're going to knock these guys to the ground, and we're going to score some points. The dude gets a spin move around Javon Hargrave and runs for 15 yards and a first down. I immediately put my heads in my hand and said, this may be a long one. If he's doing that stuff, it's going to be a long day for San Francisco. And ultimately, it led to a loss. So, need to be a little better next Sunday if they want to get a dub.
Yeah, next Sunday, the opponent is the Rams. The Rams have just scored their first touchdown of the game in the final minute of the third quarter, but they are down 34-10 in Arizona to the Cardinals. So the Rams, as you said, will be 0-2. The Seahawks will be 2-0. It is maybe the least impressive 2-0 of all time. They
yes,
beat
yes.
the Broncos in Bo Nix's debut, the starting quarterback for the Broncos, barely, in week one. And then this week in New England, although maybe New England is better than we think, although I'm having a hard time believing that, they need overtime to beat New England. They win that one 23-20. So they are 2-0, but with wins over the relatively hapless Broncos and Patriots, both close games, one of them in overtime. So Seahawks are the leaders in the NFC West right now. The Cardinals and Niners will be 1-1, and the Rams will be 0-2. I'm not sure that's how anyone predicted that the NFC West would be through 2 weeks, but it's a not necessarily a super long season. It's very young right now. It's early. There's plenty of time to make up some ground if you are the 49ers. Okay, back out to the phones we go as overtime continues. It's Mark, Randy, Sterling, Bennett with you. The Niners fall to the Vikings, 23-17, the final. Jerry has been hanging out patiently on hold. Jerry's in San Francisco. What's up, Jerry? You're on overtime on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're trying to make sense of this loss, yeah, Jerry. What about you?
Yeah. You know, I think our views on games are colored by assumptions of what should happen and expectations that are born out of, you know, prior years and the preseason. And one of your previous callers said, you know, we don't know who the Vikings are. And I think, you know, that's a critical point. We make an assumption that the Vikings, it should be a W. But the Vikings had an excellent offense last year. And on defense this year, Brian Flores finally got to bring in his own set of guys. We got five new starters on defense to go with that good offense. And at the end of the day, it's a, you know, these games are decided by small margins. And I think, or, you know, I hope personally, I'm a Vikings fan, I hope the Niners will look back on this loss as a loss to a really good team on the road and not feel like, you know, bad about it as in this moment in time. You know, we'll see how it all plays out. But it's like you said, the world looks upside down right now, but some of it's real, and you just don't know what you're going to get at the start of a new NFL season.
Yeah, Jerry, before you go, I want to ask you, what do you think the Vikings are? You think this is legitimately who they are? Are they a good football team?
I think they're an excellent, well-coached football team. I'm a little worried about Sam Darnold. He looked a little bit like a headless chicken at times. But otherwise, you know, as you said earlier on in this game, this could easily have been a 20-point loss for the Niners. We played really well. Credit to us. But credit to you guys. I wouldn't be down on Brock Purdy. I think he's an excellent QB. I certainly shout out to the 49ers fans. I've never seen so much color, not purple, in the Metrodome unless the Packers are in town. So that was staggering.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Jerry. Sounds like, I know you're a Vikings fan, but it sounds like you don't have too many biases there. I think he's seeing it relatively fairly. I didn't think Brock Purdy was terrible. I don't think he was bad. I think he was okay. He was fine. But the reality, Sterling, when we're talking about the Niners quarterback and we're talking about how he performed last year, and we have in our mind what this team is capable of, and we have in the back of our mind the idea that at the end of this regular season, he's going to be eligible for a record-breaking contract extension. The reality, Sterling, is that just good or okay is not good enough. Like that's the reality that you have to have this conversation in. Like that's the context that matters here. And Brock Purdy, again, I don't think he was bad by any stretch of the imagination. Two turnovers. One was a weird, fluky play. The other, maybe he was a beat late, and it was a really nice play by the linebacker. But yeah, two turnovers. That goes on Purdy's ledger. I think for the most part, the reason why the passing game was a little bit stop and go and herky-jerky was less about Purdy and more about the Vikings defensive backs doing a great job on the Niners receivers and pass catchers. But the reality, Sterling, is we hold Brock Purdy to an incredibly high standard, and he did not come close to meeting that standard today.
We don't just hold Brock to an incredibly high standard. I think most Niner fans, or if not all of them, would say you were a top five MVP finalist last year. The expectation coming into year three as a starter is you're going to be better. Now, you may not be the MVP. No one's predicting that here. At least I'm not. But today, in the last 2 weeks, has not been a Brock Purdy MVP-like performance that we've seen in previous years. And yes, to Horace Bird's comment on the YouTube chat brought to you by First NorCal Credit Union, the Vikings defense did look very fast. They did tackle well. Credit goes to the Vikings. They came to play today. Yeah. They made a statement early. We came into their house saying, hey, we should win this game by 16, 15 points. If you had asked me before this game started, I would have said San Francisco should put up 30 points on a secondary like Minnesota's. And they said, that ain't gonna happen here, bud. you go ahead and take a seat and watch what happens. And they put on a clinic of how to tackle a team like San Francisco. There wasn't many plays where Debo and Kittle were running free down the sideline after breaking two or three tackles. They did a great job in this one. But Brock Purdy, there were a couple more throws that probably should have been picked off or could have been picked off. I don't know what's the reason for that, but you know, Brock really has shown to be a much better quarterback than he has shown in the first 2 weeks. I think that's kind of where I'm at, where we've seen you be great. So far, you've been okay. But I want to see you be great again. Because once Brock Purdy can become the quarterback he was last year, this offense has no bounds. It has no heights it can't reach, even if Christian McCaffrey's not going to be out there. Brock Purdy has shown that, you know, he doesn't need Christian McCaffrey out there every single game to be awesome. He can utilize Ayuk and Debo and Kittle and Juszczyk. There's too many weapons to just be okay. And I think week four, week five is a really good opportunity. Rams, bad defense. Cardinals, bad defense. They'll be at a pretty good offense so far. And the Patriots, who, although are playing better, I think aren't going to be great when it's all said and done. You have 3 weeks to get this thing right and hopefully get Purdy back to his MVP almost winning ways.
Yeah, Brock Purdy today, 28 for 36, 319 yards, a touchdown, one interception, also lost a fumble. It was originally ruled an interception but goes down officially in the scorebook as a fumble. So two turnovers for Brock, one touchdown, his first touchdown pass of the year, 319 through the air. Here's Brock Purdy talk about the Vikings defense that he went up against earlier today. Here's Purdy.
How difficult is it going up against that scheme, especially when you're trying to beat yourselves out of the hole?
Yeah, it's tough. First or second down, you know, aren't positive plays and, you know, just trying to move the ball. And then, you know, you got to rely on third down with, you know, their scheme and obviously their disguises and stuff. It can be tough. And, you know, they just did a good job with making it look like one thing and it was another and different types of blitzes and stuff and or just dropping out. So they did a lot. That's just on us. It's on me to move the ball, be efficient on first and second down and get us in third and manageable and then convert on third down. So it's a game of football. It's four quarters like that. And, you know, we had to learn the hard way.
Yeah, Sterling, the 49ers got behind the chains pretty often in this one, and it's a big reason why they were 2 for 10 on third downs. They were often facing third and 6 and 7 and 8 or even more in this one. And while you feel like you'd like to convert at a higher rate than 2 for 10, even on those third and intermediate or third and longs, you make it that much more difficult on yourself by not having success on first and second down. That's what the sacks did. There were a couple of negative runs for Jordan Mason. Overall, the run game was fine. 20 carries for Mason, 100 yards. You average 5 a pop. You'll take that every single game that you're out there. But there were a number of negative plays. And when you do that, I don't care how good your passing game is, it's going to be difficult to convert those. And maybe you could also look at maybe some of the play calling. Shanahan came out really aggressive in this game, maybe a little bit more than normal, and he was passing the ball early, not running all that often early in the game. I don't think Mason had a carry, definitely not the first drive. I'm not sure if he did the second drive either, but the 49ers kind of went away from it early, and then you kind of get behind the chains if the passing game isn't working, and then you got to try to get it all back at once. It was like that all game long where there just wasn't a rhythm, and aside from a couple of long drives, which didn't feature big chunk plays. It featured kind of a slow grind, 5 yards here, 3 yards there, 4 yards there, which works. It got them all the way down to the goal line. They didn't score, but it got them all the way down there from deep in their own end. There wasn't really a moment where you felt like the offense got into a rhythm and was just reeling off chunk play after chunk play after chunk play, which we've become accustomed to seeing from this group.
The Niners, to my count, had 5 to 6 plays, not including sacks, that were negative plays. And if you are continually in first or second and long and third and long, you're asking a lot of Brock Purdy to go up against a defense that can play 8 guys back and to sit at the first down line and say, hey, come beat us. That's really hard to beat no matter the quarterback. Now, unfortunately, there were a handful of times in this game where Sam Darnold did just that. I went back and through my notes, I think I saw there were 5 to 6 third downs that were third down and 6 and more that were conversions for the Vikings.
Yep.
Whereas San Francisco felt like almost every single drive, every single 4 set of downs they had, it was 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8. to a point where Kyle was like, we have to go for it on fourth down here. There's even times in this game where Shanahan was setting up for shorter fourth downs, knowing, hey, we have to go for this here. So, I'm not sure if it's the game plan. I know last year the Deebo Samuel wide back stuff wasn't working. It worked okay against the Jets in week one. Didn't see a lot of Deebo Samuel as the wide back today. Maybe that was because they wanted to attack the Vikings secondary and test them early, albeit wasn't the way in which many of us thought they were going to. Deep downfield, more the intermediate routes, which is fine, but definitely questionable. But I will say this. I am tired of seeing the Deebo Samuel screen pass when they have 7 to 8 guys just sitting there waiting for it. Last year, defenses knew, okay, if Deebo Samuel's in the backfield, they're going to run the football. It didn't work. They had to stop utilizing it. This year, it's a lot of Deebo Samuel screen passes. I don't want to see it anymore. It's happening too often, through two games. Everyone knows. Hey, if Deebo Samuel's lined out wide, he likely becomes a screen pass as soon as he doesn't run 1 yard in front of him when the ball is snapped. And when that happens, you have plays like the last drive of the game for San Francisco or penultimate drive of the game for San Francisco where it's almost picked off by Van Ginkle. Like, you cannot have those plays in clutch moments because those are timing plays. Those are hike, balls out. Okay, the last thing you want to see is the linebacker standing right in front of it. That almost happened today. Let's do something else. It obviously wasn't working. Let's change the script somewhat and maybe get more vertical, especially at the goal line in the red zone. I know you can't get too vertical, you're out of bounds, but it's like everyone knows what's coming. Let's show some creativity from the genius that is Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah, and I also think that's where that's where you lose me on the Ayuk conversation about whether it's Shanahan being, I don't know, playing politics in the wide receiver room or being upset about how the offseason went and the negotiation, that he's punishing Ayuk purposefully or that Brock Purdy isn't looking his way, because whatever. This game was absolutely begging for someone to open up the field. And the way you do that is by beating your defensive backs down the field a couple of times. And in terms of Niners that have that in their bag, it's Brandon Ayuk and then like a giant gap before you get to anybody else. So like, this game was begging for Brandon Ayuk to do that. And if you do that, then the defense has to respect that, and it opens things up over the middle, and a screenplay to Deebo, a quick over the middle to George Kittle. Juwan Jennings, who had a couple of big catches again in this game. That's how it opens things up. So, again, I'll just say, if there is anything untoward happening about Brandon Ayuk other than this is just him trying to get into a rhythm, then the whole 49ers coaching staff needs to be fired because they lost them this game, if that's how this happened. Yes. I guarantee you that's not how it happened, because if Ayuk is playing at an all-pro level, this offense looks a little bit different and it opens up everything else for this offense. Now, with that said, it is on Brandon Ayuk to get back up to speed as soon as he can. Not that he's without blame here or that the Niners aren't without blame for letting it get to this situation, but it's the reality, and now you got to get past it as soon as you can. Back out to the phones, 888-957-9570. Edgar is in San Antonio. What's up, Edgar? You're here on Overtime on 95.7 The Game. How you doing?
Hey, how you doing, Dan Fathers?
We're doing all right, man. What's up?
Hey, I just wanted to quickly point out a few things. I think, you know, as a Niner fan since I was about 8 years old, there is an expectation. And even this year, there's a great expectation because of the simple fact that, again, how many Pro Bowlers do we have on our team? How many former Pro Bowlers do we have on our offense?
Not five.
And how many Pro Bowlers? And how many Pro Bowlers does the Vikings have?
Not as many.
I mean, we're just talking about Jordan Jefferson. And Justin, the one thing that bothered me a little bit was the fact that you're going to put Odom one-on-one with the best wide receiver in the entire league. I'm still baffled at that one. But there is a silver lining. The silver lining is this. We got the Rams next week. It's a get-right game, fellas.
Yeah, Edgar, I mean, you better hope so. The Rams are as beat up as anybody early in the NFL season right now without a couple of offensive linemen and without Puka Nacua for sure. Cooper Kupp doubtful to return for their Week 2 game right now, and they're getting absolutely whooped in Arizona. 41-10 is the score now in favor of the Cardinals with 9 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. You better hope it's a get-right game. What's interesting, Sterling, is the Niners have often played the Rams in kind of like do or die moments in the regular season. Yep. This isn't necessarily a do or die moment. You obviously don't want to be 1-2, but the Niners have oftentimes gone up against the Rams, whether it's at home or on the road, coming off of maybe the low point of their season, and it has always been the Rams that gets them playing their best football and gets them back on track. This is kind of early in the season to be talking about that, but if you are looking for some kind of positive correlation, the Rams, to our caller's point, to Joshua's point, the Rams have kind of been that get-right game for the Niners in the past.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just playing a familiar opponent. You can get back to who you are. You're going to be back in California. It's technically a road game, although it's basically a home game at this point. Going to be a lot of red.
Yep.
Going to be a lot of red down there next Sunday. And look, the Niner fans traveled so well. They were there today in Minnesota. A lot of red. I think Vivid Seat said it was like 36% red, but it felt like a lot more. You definitely heard go Niner chants late in that fourth quarter when they were mounting their eventual non-comeback, hopeful comeback. But next week should be, it better be a get-right game for San Francisco. You have to get the offense going. Kyle Shanahan, even if it is as simple as just let's run the football 35-plus times like it is against the Jets and let Brock Purdy be efficient. Like last year, Brock didn't need a high sample size or sample rate to be great. Brock was, I'm going to throw the football 25 times. I'm going to have 2-plus touchdowns. I'm going to keep drives alive with my legs and being a playmaker and, you know, do things that other quarterbacks just can't do. He was the most efficient deep ball passer in the entire NFL last year with the least amount of attempts. It's not like he needs 25 shots downfield a game. It's a couple here or there, and hopefully Deebo Samuel, who hates the Rams, is like, look, I'm seeing red this Sunday, and it's not just in the stands. Hopefully Ayuk is saying, okay, I've been pretty bad through 2 weeks. This is my reemergence in the offense, and if it is, you know, that game will be heralded as, wow, you buried the Rams. They're 0-3 now this year. You've almost erased one of your supposed toughest opponents. You're also back on track. Now go crush New England and the Cardinals, and hopefully you have won 3 games in a row, taking it to a team like the Dallas Cowboys or the Seattle Seahawks in Thursday Night Football in Seattle. So tough loss today. Not a lot to glean from and say, it wasn't that bad. But there is some hope maybe around the corner for this team to get right.
Yeah, and maybe to one of our callers' original points or earlier points as well, maybe you look back at this loss, not that it's ever going to be deemed a good performance or acceptable or anything, but maybe 6 weeks from now, the Minnesota Vikings are 6-2, and they're leading the division. Like, I mean, the Lions now are 1-1, and the Packers are without a quarterback right now, although they won with Malik Willis, who actually looked decent against the Colts, oddly enough. I'm not so sure how many people were expecting that. I played the Colts defense in my fantasy league because I figured Malik Willis is going to throw 3 interceptions, and he was good, and Josh Jacobs ran all over everybody. Whatever. Exactly. Don't care about my fantasy team. It is what it is. But, I mean, suddenly you might be looking at the Vikings as maybe a team that is sneakily in postseason contention, and you look back at this loss in a handful of weeks as, oh, maybe a little bit more understandable. But on the flip side, you are the 49ers, and you're going to be favored in nearly every single game that you play this year because you just simply have more talent than everybody else. This is never going to be a good performance, don't get me wrong there, but maybe the way the rest of this season plays out will kind of change how we feel about this game weeks down the road. Okay, time for a break here on Overtime. When we come back, one final segment to get to. We got to hear from Brock Purdy because he talked about what we've been talking about. Brandon Ayuk, is he open? Is he in the right spots? We'll hear from Brock coming up on the other side as Overtime continues. Also, Sterling and I have to give out game balls. It's a little more difficult in a loss. Maybe we'll give out some game balls to the Vikings. You'll have to stay tuned to find out. That's coming up on the other side as overtime continues. It's Sterling and Grandy with you on 95.7 The Game.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Game.
Down and 10, they get by Darrisaw Bosa, devours Arnold. A sack right there for Nick Bosa, first
now
of the
back
season.
To overtime with Grandy, Madsen, and Bennett, with sounds from the locker room and your calls at 888-957-9570. Overtime continues now.
That's a sackaroonie, baby.
Yes, it is. Nick Bosa, one of his two sacks, his first two of the year, but it was all for naught. The 49ers fall to the Vikings 23-17. I appreciate Ken, though, as we get to our final segment of the show, Sterling, trying to give us a little bit of positivity. A Nick Bosa sack instead of another Niner terrible mistake coming out of a break called by Kevin Harlan, of course, on CBS. That's what today has been, Sterling. It's been frustrating. A lot of bad plays, bad mistakes, bad decisions by the San Francisco 49ers. There were two turnovers by Brock Purdy. There was a blocked punt, which, by the way, there's been so many blocked punts around the NFL early in the season. It's been weird. I know the NFL has been debuting the dynamic kickoff. Did I miss a punt block rule change? Because everyone is blocking punts these days in the NFL.
Well, first off, if you're going to say Nick Bosa's name, you got to say it like Kevin Harlan. Bosa!
Bosa!
Bosa! He called the game today, then did like the mid-game highlights.
What was that about?
Game.
Oh my God.
And then you let Nate Burleson say, "I can't hear anything," while the highlights being played. It's like, all right, like working in radio, we know exactly what that's like, but still, it was pretty cool to see live. But yeah, some positivity. I was surprised. Ken's been asking me, what should I come back with each time? And I'm like, I don't think there are many Niner highlights to play, so just play all the Vikings highlights at the beginning half of the show, because everyone wants to be negative. But let's end on a brighter note. We'll get to game balls later, but yeah, let's have some fun, be positive. It's not all sunshine and rainbows, but it certainly ain't raining over here just yet, so we're doing okay.
Yeah, no doubt. Oh, no doubt. Brock Purdy, I talked about this, teased this going into our last commercial break. Brock Purdy asked about Brandon Ayuk. We've spent so much time discussing Ayuk and is he up to speed, and if he is it, you know, back in the doghouse for how the offseason went? Is it Brock Purdy simply not seeing him? Is it he's the second or third read and Purdy's thrown to the first read as he should if it's open? What's going on here? Brock, what do you think about Brandon Ayuk? Is he getting open down the field? How would you evaluate him through two games? Here's what Brock Purdy said post game today.
I think he looks pretty good and stuff, but I don't, you know, I'm drawn back going, BA's not like what he's been like. I don't think that at all. I think for me, I just try to go through my reads, and he's been where he needs to be. And, you know, there's probably a couple routes maybe in certain looks where we both could have been better on some stuff, but that's just like, you know, early in the season stuff, if you ask me. So I know that we'll continue to get better together in our connection and everything. But for four quarters, man, I thought BA grinded and, you know, went and competed, man, and I'm proud of him for that.
So Brock Purdy isn't worried, saying the right things there. I got distracted immediately when that soundbite started playing, because he is picking up on all of the Kyle Shanahan-isms. The number of times he says "and stuff" in that cut, it sounds like he's Kyle Shanahan. He says, "Yeah, I think BA looks good and stuff." That is directly out of the mouth of Kyle Shanahan. So I was a little bit distracted listening to the rest of that soundbite. I'm sure he didn't say anything crazy, Sterling, because Brock Purdy never does. But we have so many you know, knowledgeable football minds saying that Brock Purdy executes what Kyle Shanahan wants to a T better than any other quarterback ever has. He is also picking up on the Kyle Shanahan vocabulary and mannerisms. He is truly becoming a clone of Kyle Shanahan, the way that he talks as well.
So what you're saying is, middle of the game, we're going to see Kyle Shanahan hug Brock Purdy, and they're going to morph into one human being.
Yeah.
And Kyle Shanahan will finally become that quarterback of the Niners he's always wanted to be. Because it kind of what it sounds like you're saying, that Brock Purdy is becoming Kyle Shanahan, or at least a mouth for him, if you will.
No doubt.
Which I'm not sure if it's a good thing at all. kind of scary, to be honest with you. I don't mind them seeing the game the same way, but I don't think I want to have two Kyle Shanahans in the media. It's terrifying. It's terrifying to watch. We used to do a segment on the night show with Dan Devone and Alan Stiles where it was Kyle Shanahan. How many times would Kyle say in the first 15 minutes of his press conference? And you're like, Kyle, it's been 60 seconds. You said 17 ums. What's going on, man? So hopefully Brock doesn't get that bad because editing that thing is a mess. Sorry, Ken, but good luck.
Yeah, not an easy thing to do. But ultimately, if we're getting past how he said it, what he actually said is, oh, but yeah, he grinded out there for four quarters. This is just early season stuff that we're going through. I mean, he has to say that as the quarterback of the team. He's not going to throw anyone under the bus. By the way, what Ayuk went through this past offseason is something that he's going to go through next offseason. Hopefully, it's not nearly as dramatic as the Ayuk one was. So he's not going to say anything out of line. Of course, we know that. But Brock Purdy is not worrying about Brandon Ayuk. He said there's things that both of us maybe can get better at, but again, he said that's just early season stuff. It's normal to have that kind of thing happen in week number two. What is maybe a little bit concerning if you are the 49ers, Sterling, or if you're a 49er fan, is, okay, Brock, fair. Like, that's all entirely fair. But you think back to last year when Brock Purdy was recovering from a UCL tear. Yeah. He had no offseason. Did not get to throw with Ayuk or anybody really all offseason. And he had a relatively normal camp in preseason, I know. But it was a lot less normal last offseason than this offseason, even with the Ayuk and Trent drama. And you came out week number one and absolutely dominated one of the best defenses in the NFL. Then you go to LA week two, if memory serves, and you win that game. It was more of a hard-fought game. Then you have Thursday night at home against the Jets and put on an absolute show. Giants. You weren't missing a beat early in the season last year, despite it being a tumultuous offseason for you personally. Now you come out, you have a regular offseason. Again, no Ayuk, but you have a regular offseason for you, for the quarterback himself, and you kind of have this clunker offensively in week number two, and you say it's just early season stuff. That's okay, but the early season last year you were passing with flying colors, no doubt about it.
When Ayuk had, what, two touchdowns against the Pittsburgh Steelers, it was, oh my goodness, Ayuk's going to get paid big money once it's all said and done. And I think Ayuk got hurt against the Rams and then didn't play against the Giants.
That's so right.
It wasn't perfect, but for Brock Purdy, he came out throwing darts all over the place, looking like a quarterback number one and a top 15 guy. Now he's probably a top 10 guy, but he doesn't have to answer these questions about Deebo Samuel, George Kittle, Juwan Jennings. Juwan Jennings got a brand new contract. He was there. I wonder why, of all the people on the roster, Brandon Ayuk's the one getting singled out. Oh, that's right, because he wasn't there and is not up to speed just yet. Brock Purdy said the only time they truly had to throw was when they had a single practice. Nobody else was out there. Him and Ayuk went out there by themselves and got a few balls and started throwing it around. They didn't have a training camp. And if you know, receivers are one of the most important positions to get that timing right.
Yep.
Quarterback and receiver. If it's not there, you're going to see struggles like this. You're going to see a player of a Ayuk's caliber who is awesome. Everyone wanted to pay Brandon Ayuk. He's awesome. They want him to be here and be a mainstay in this offense for the next four or five seasons. But so far, there is a clear-cut reason as to why he's not been BA of the past couple years. Because he wasn't there for 4 months. and has to cram 4 months of preparation into 2 weeks. That's impossible. You're not going to see that BA. Hopefully it's against the Rams, but I'm going to assume it's not going to be for maybe two more weeks until we finally see Brandon Ayuk of the past few years.
Yeah, and to everything that you're saying, it's why I think so many people, myself included, I actually don't know for a fact if you felt this way, but I'm sure you did. It's why so many of us were so much more worried about Ayuk's holdout or hold in than Trent's holdout.
Yeah.
Because obviously you would like to have both of them there. One, Trent is like 36 years old and he's a future Hall of Famer and you just trust him to know what he needs and know kind of when his body clock is going off and know when he needs to be ready. And the offensive line was bad today, and Trent is a part of that. He shares some of the blame for that, no doubt about it. I'm sure he was still probably like the best out of the group because that's what Trent Williams is. He's one of the greatest offensive linemen to ever play this game. But everything you're talking about there, the timing and the rhythm and just the physicality of being able to cut and to push off, you know, slyly off of defensive backs and all of that, it's something that you obviously have internally in its natural ability, but it is also something that, I mean, it's the same as any other skill. If you don't work at it for a while, you don't get it back up to the level that you're used to, you're going to be starting from square one. And all those sorts of things that a wide receiver does, it's a little bit more of the buildup than, say, the back pedal of a left tackle and, you know, him shoving someone else into the ground. Like, that's difficult, and I'm obviously very much so making it sound easier than it really is, but that's why so many of us were so much more concerned about Ayuk's holdout, not necessarily because of importance to the team, because you might argue Trent more valuable than Ayuk. You certainly could argue that, and I wouldn't be one to argue against you. You could feel either way you want to feel about that, but when it comes to who needs the time to get ready more, it is undoubtedly the wide receiver versus the offensive lineman. And I think through 2 weeks, although the O-line was not good today, that has held true. Ayuk seems a little bit more rusty than Trent Williams at this point.
And we've seen this before. Nick Bosa last year took him a little bit, didn't feel right really until the middle part of the season after the bye week against the Jags, which his defense was incredible against. But we also saw it with Deebo Samuel.
Mm-hmm.
And he was signed far earlier than Brandon Ayuk was.
Yes.
And Deebo will tell you himself, the first year of that brand new contract, he wasn't good. He openly told the media, I never want to put that performance on tape ever again.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot tell me through 2 weeks Brandon Ayuk wants to say, yeah, I played pretty good. No, you didn't, Brandon. And Ayuk is by no means the reason why they lost this game. It's just to say that they're going to need Brandon Ayuk to step up and hopefully be a cog in this machine and be the Brandon Ayuk of the past few years that has the most touchdowns, the most targets, and be this team's top receiver again, if they're not going to have Christian McCaffrey. And even if they are going to have Christian McCaffrey and they want to win a Super Bowl, Ayuk still got to be that guy. You're not going to win a Super Bowl with Deebo Samuel being your number one receiver and a guy that can't separate against man coverage. You just can't do that. You got to have a guy like Brandon Ayuk out there with Juwan, with Deebo Samuel, with hopefully Christian McCaffrey and George Kittle. It takes all of these players. It's 11 on 11, not 1v1. They need all of these guys to come together, and hopefully that starts by week three, because we all expected a slow start to the year, but you need to pick it up. Before you know, you can be the Rams, and we're going to be 0-2.
Yeah, maybe we expected a slow start in terms of not looking like the world beaters you did for a lot of the regular season last year, but still picking up wins. You lose today, and you're now 1-1. You fall 23-17, and now you go to the Rams on the road next week, and they are beaten up, and they have, they have officially lost, by the way. Final score in Arizona, 41-10. So the Rams are 0-2. They're 0-2. You can, you know, the overtime loss to the Lions last week, fine. That's a really good Lions team who lost to Tampa today, by the way. But Arizona absolutely blows the doors off of the Rams, 41-10. Cooper Kupp injured, did not return, but looks like an ankle injury. Stay tuned tomorrow here on 95.7 The Game. If we get any sort of major news around Cooper Kupp, we will, of course, keep you updated here on 95.7 The Game. But Sterling, we've got about 10 minutes to go here in overtime on 95.7 The Game, which means we got to get to game balls. You can go in any direction you want, whether it is Niners or Vikings. I know we've had some awful Niners performances in the past where we have just said, you know what, screw this. Let's go to the opponents and hand out game balls there. I'll let you do whatever you want. We will start on the offensive side for either team. Pick either team, whatever is speaking to you. Who gets a game ball for you on offense in this Vikings 23-17 win over the Niners?
For the sake of the show being titled Overtime and it's a Niners postgame, I will lean towards the Niners in this one. How about George Kittle? George Kittle is often, well, not forgotten, kind of the lost man in the rotation. He'll go a couple weeks with one catch, then he'll explode for three touchdowns against the Cowboys like last year in prime time. In this game, though, seven catches, 76 yards, almost 11 yards per catch. The lone Brock Purdy touchdown pass of the game came in clutch a handful of times. Why not George Kittle? Didn't even play the whole game. Who knows what else he could have done in the fourth quarter. So George Kittle gets my offensive game ball of week two.
I like that. I'm looking through the game log really quick because I remember at least a couple of George Kittle third down catches. Yep. He had a third and six conversion early in the game. Went for 10 yards. He then also got 11 on a 3rd and 14 that set up the 4th and 3 conversion. That doesn't count as a 3rd down conversion, but Kittle was big there. He had a catch of just 3 yards to set up the 4th and goal from the 2, and ultimately that failed. But George Kittle was targeted consistently, and this is just like that one drive, Sterling. I don't have time to go through the rest of the game log. George Kittle was consistently targeted on 3rd down, and at least at the early point of this season, Kittle does seem to be Purdy's go-to target when he has those big, big moments, and Kittle was good at that today, so good pick. Offensive game ball for me. I'll stick with the Niners as well. Jordan Mason definitely deserves a shout. Second consecutive start, second consecutive 100-yard game, 20 carries, 100 yards, 5 a pop, and a touchdown, had a 22-yard scamper. He caught one pass for 4 yards out of the backfield. Again, one catch last week, one catch this week, but solid as ever on the ground. I'm a little concerned, Sterling, which is why I wanted to see a little bit more Debo in the backfield. I'm a little concerned about Jordan Mason holding up for an extended period of time, dealing with 20-plus touches every single game just because of the physical way that he runs, and he has not seen this many touches week in and week out since college, and he's now in his third year in the league. Without McCaffrey for at the very least 3 more games, I know you think it's going to be maybe more like 5 more games, without McCaffrey for that long, you got to make Mason last. And I'm not saying you give multiple carries to Isaac Garendo, a rookie who looked good in the final preseason game, but you really don't know what that guy is. But I'm a little concerned about getting to a point where maybe Jordan Mason begins to wear down just a little bit because he's that physical of a runner. All in all, though, we did not see that impact him today. He was great once again. 5 yards to carry, 100 yards and a touchdown. He gets a game ball from me, Sterling.
Yeah, I don't want to say he's made people miss Christian McCaffrey or make them forget about him, because we all miss Christian McCaffrey and no want doubt. Him back out there. But Jordan Mason, I think, has, through 2 games, proven to be, at least in the short sample size we've seen so far in 2 weeks of the NFL year, one of the better running backs in the entire league so far. Yep. Which it certainly helps to have, you know, Trent Williams on your left, and despite maybe his pass protection not being very good, Colt McKivitz is a pretty good run blocker, and you have Kittle and Debo opening up lanes for you. Jordan Mason was also stuffing dudes trying to get to Brock Purdy for a couple of times in this game. So the improvements we've wanted him to make and Shanahan has wanted him to make are definitely being put to use on the field almost every single game so far this year.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, on to the defense, Sterling. Who gets the game ball for you defensively? Ooh.
Well, I mean, there's a clear-cut Niner one, and yes. I'm not going to pick that for the sake of, I want to continue to give Brian Flores his flowers.
Okay.
I know as a head coach, didn't work out for him very well in Miami for a variety of reasons, many of them not very good, but his defense today had 6 total sacks, 8 tackles for losses. They were getting their hands all over the football. Got to the quarterback 7 different times. Of course, had the fumble recovery and the interception. They were just mauling this Niners offensive line that I think we all thought was pretty good against the Jets and looked to be an improved unit as a whole coming out of week one. Brian Flores will certainly tank their PFF rating, probably pretty low when it's all said and done. So I do want to give Brian Flores flowers. And honestly, if we're being more specific, Pat Jones, the second out of Pittsburgh a couple years ago, two sacks, two TFLs, two quarterbacks hits. He was making Brock Purdy realize that I'm not going anywhere in this one. It was in the backfield a lot in this game, no matter which side he was lined up across, whether it was Trent or Colton McKivitz in this afternoon's game.
Yeah, he was awesome in this game. I'm not going to give my game ball to this guy, but another Vikings player to shout out, Blake Cashman, one of their linebackers. Yeah. He was everywhere. 13 total tackles, led all players in this game, had a sack, and it was his pass deflection on that target to Juszczyk over the middle, where Purdy was maybe a split second too late. Cashman read his eyes, came running over, knocked it away, it bobbled up into the air, and ultimately was intercepted by, I think that was Metellus, I believe, for the Vikings. Yeah, it was Metellus, one of their defensive backs who ultimately came up with it. That play was created by Cashman. He was awesome, and you're right. Credit goes to the Vikings defensive unit and Brian Flores for that. But I'll pick the obvious one that you shied away from, Fred Warner. The Niners lost this game by 6 points. If Fred Warner did not exist or was out for this game, they would have lost by 20. He was the reason this game was close. 9 tackles, led the team, had a sack, had an interception, forced 2 fumbles, one of which the Niners recovered. The Niners scored 17 points in this game. 14 of those 17 came off of turnovers forced by Fred Warner. Not just turnovers forced by the Niners defense. Turnovers forced by Fred Warner. He gifted them the ball a couple of different times. And that's when the offense took advantage and scored 14 of their 17 points. The only points the Niners offense scored that did not come off of a Fred Warner turnover, forced either an interception or his forced fumble, which was recovered by Yadam. The only 3 points the offense scored not off of a Fred Warner turnover, Sterling, was the final drive when the Vikings were content giving the Niners 20 yards underneath every single time, and even still, they couldn't get into the end zone. They kicked a field goal, and those were the only points the Niners scored not from Fred Warner forced turnovers. Thank you for leaving me that layup. Fred Warner gets my defensive game ball.
I really thought you were going to pick George Odom for a second. For the Vikings fans, he certainly gets the game ball today. He gave him a touchdown for 97 yards.
Yeah.
But, is there really any other most valuable player through 2 weeks of the NFL season, despite a loss in this one against the Vikings, other than Fred Warner? He has been the most valuable Niner thus far. The offense was off to a slow start last week. It was Fred that got the offense going, put them in a position to get a field goal, not a touchdown. But in this one, again, essentially was the defense and the offense. He was stellar so far, and in the absence of Dre Greenlaw and also D. Winters, I'm surprised he didn't play today, but picking up the pieces of that linebacker room, Fred Warner has not erased the desire to see Dre Greenlaw out there once again, but he has picked up the slack almost by himself.
Yeah.
He has been phenomenal to a point of, I know there's players that have, 5.5 sacks, like Aiden Hutchinson and Max Crosby was great today. Fred Warner should be somewhere in that defensive player of the year conversation this early in the NFL season.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. Speaking of Fred Warner, we got to get out of here in a couple of minutes. Fred Warner was asked post-game about the 97-yard touchdown catch and run by Justin Jefferson. And in classic Fred Warner fashion, he's saying he's got to do better. Here's Fred on that play.
We're in a man coverage blitz. I was one of the guys that was blitzing, and I got to get home to get some pressure on Sam. He's able to step up in the pocket and deliver a great ball to Justin, and we just got to find a way to get him down right there.
Cover zero blitzes against the Vikings in Minnesota. What could go wrong? Am I right, Sterling?
You going to put Nick Sorensen up in that box next week. He was so bad today. Shanahan's like, I don't want to see you anymore on the sideline. Go up in the booth.
Yeah, if you don't know what we're talking about, there was the infamous call at the end of the first half, Monday Night Football in Minnesota last year, where the Niners Of course, Steve Wilks called an all-out blitz, essentially, and Jordan Addison ripped the ball away from Mooney Ward and scored on a last-second, like, 60-yard touchdown or whatever it was. And that was the beginning of the end of the Steve Wilks era, Sterling. It began in Minnesota. The beginning of the end began in Minnesota, and hopefully this is not the beginning of the end of this Niner defensive group. I'm sure it won't be. But kind of funny the way that the world works. You kind of had a similar play call, cost you big time in this game as well.
I mean, hey, the Vikings are haunting the Niners. They 1992. Really, like, 1992, I wasn't even thought of. My parents weren't even dating. They were like, I don't know who Sterling is. He's somewhere in the world, I guess. I don't know. Like, I wasn't even thought of. They haven't won since 1992.
32 years ago, Sterling. 32 pain. Years ago. It's a long time.
Straight pain.
Yeah. It is. Hopefully next week will be less painful. The Niners travel to L.A. to take on the Rams Sunday the 22nd, a week from today. That game might be close to wrapping up. Exactly 1 week from now, it's a 125 game down in L.A. Probably will be in the fourth quarter at this point. We will join you for overtime. Kyle Madsen will be back. 1 week from now, we'll be gearing up for hopefully an overtime that follows a Niner win. They're 1-1 so far this year as they fall to the Minnesota Vikings today by a final score of 23-7. Sterling, it's been a pleasure as always, and we'll talk next week, huh?
Dude, it better be a win. If it's not, I'm going to start yelling very loudly.
And that's not a joke. He will do that. He will do that. Sometimes Niners losses, I'm not ever rooting for them, but it is fun to see Sterling's reaction at times. But I do not want to put him through that emotional turmoil ever again. So Niners, hopefully you win the final 15 games of your season, and we'll call it good at that point.
Let's not put my wife through that for the next 15 weeks.
Good point.
She will not be happy.
Yeah, good point. All right, Sterling, we'll catch you up next week.
See you, man. Have a good one.
Yep. All right, that's do it for us here on Overtime today here on 95.7 The Game. For Ken and Cam behind the glass, for my partner Sterling, my name is Mark Randy signing off. Thanks so much for tuning in. Niners fall in Minnesota today, 23-17. Our coverage is ending today, but make sure you're locked in all week long on 95.7 The Game. Bright and early tomorrow morning, Bonte and Shasky 6 to 10, Steiny Goo 10 to 2, Willard and Dibbs from 2 to 6, reacting to a rough Niner loss. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll talk later on 95.7 The Game.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.